If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to Insane in the Membrane, Edinburgh edition.
Insane in the Membrane.
Throughout July and August, we'll be talking to comedians in the build-up to the biggest comedy festival in the calendar and finding out what's going on in their heads. And what better way to begin than with two times Edinburgh-nominated stand-up, Ahir Shah. Producer Paul and I put on our raincoats and trotted off to the Avalon building in West London to have a chat with him.
Nice one, Ahir. It's good to see you, man.
You did?
Nice one. I was just listening to you on Stu Goldsmith's.
Mm.
And, wow, there was some stuff that you covered on there. I was like, whoa, because we've never really met before. I've seen you around.
Not probably. Well, we had the sort of changeover in Edinburgh where we'd sort of see each other every day, but I was always just like, fuck, I need to get out of here as quickly as possible.
You just got off stage. Like,
So you've never seen me this dry?
Your eyes are smaller this time. Yeah.
Really, like, just feeling quite calm, physically.
Oh, yeah, because last year I'd see you in Cabaret Voltaire, which is a tricky room. I've performed in there, and it's because it feels. I mean, I love the venue, but it feels like a tomb.
Oh yeah.
And then when it's as rammed as you had it, because it was rammed every day, and I was like, "Fuck me, how are you?" Because there's no real light, there's no sunlight.
Yeah. Well, there was one very odd day. I think it was during the last year's Fringe. I've been in there a couple of years. But where the lighting rig just failed entirely.
No.
So I had to be lit by the phone lights of the front row. And you're like, yeah, this is proper free fringe situation. Just do what you need to do to make this situation worthwhile.
That is amazing. And they all mucked in and they all helped.
Yeah, yeah.
Beautiful.
Which is really nice because it's like, well, you're here now.
We are trapped in here, basically. Yeah. There's only one way out of this. We have to finish the show. Yeah. And it was impressive to see, because I've performed in that room. I've performed in there when it's been packed, and I have performed in there when it's been empty. So it's a different experience, difficult room to perform in when there's no one in it.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. But I know all too well. I did 3 years worth of shows in there. So.
Oh, man, so you've experienced all, like me, you know.
Mm.
Yeah, it's a funny old room, because there's a weird divide halfway up.
Yeah, well, it's just like, it feels like a dungeon.
Yeah.
And like down to the fact that there are those weird, like occasionally just chains on the wall and you never fully understand why.
Yeah,
and it's like, right, so there may only be 20 audience members, but the rest of the chairs are definitely full of 100 ghosts. So
there's a bit as well on the stage, because they have DJs and things like that in there. We came in one day to do our show and they'd forgotten to raise up the DJ table. And it comes from the ceiling on chains.
Oh, really?
And it looks like the bed that Frankenstein was brought back to life on. And you're going, what is this fucking shit? And they go, oh, yeah, it's for the DJ. Is it?
Yeah. And you're like, I am not a DJ, so not be here?
Please? That's blood, isn't it? No, it's not. So it was interesting to see how you were rammed every day last year and it was really impressive, you know. And how do you, like you say, when you come off stage, you're still buzzing from the show, but you're trapped in that space, because then you've got to sort out your bucket, and then you've got to sort out, and then you've got the crowds coming in for the other shows.
Well, that's why it's always a bit odd, because obviously, like, I needed to head everyone off before the bucket thing, because people who are listening may not know a lot about this, but the different models of the way that Edinburgh works. Either you do a paid show, in which case absolutely everyone makes a hell of a lot of money apart from the performer. So it's just like, because why should the person who actually created the thing receive any recompense?
Exactly. You're doing it for the love.
Yeah, exactly. And it turns out you can eat love. I don't know if you knew that.
So nourishing.
Yeah, 2,500 calories of love every day. Yes, please. Nice and balanced. It's like, what you've got to do is you've got to have like your platonic for the main and your familial on the side, and then you've got like a romantic as a dessert afterwards. And then the way that we were doing it at Cab Vol, the free fringe thing, where it's basically sort of like a cross between busking and a hostage situation.
Get everyone
into the room, and then obviously, like, a lot of them, if you're like, thanks very much for coming, and please do give me some money at the end, I'll just be walking out, and then half of the cheap pricks So I would end up walking through them, just yelling my bucket speech over the top of them. I was like, look, this is not, do not leave. Like, you are not allowed to leave. I'm doing this while I walk through you, because otherwise half of you cheap shits won't give me anything.
I can see you moonwalking out of here.
Yeah, exactly. And that's like, if you do not have cash, I do not give a shit. I literally take contactless and my contactless reader. It sort of had to be done, but it just meant that there was just this additional bit of murder on your voice at the end of it. Quite onerous hour.
It's just shows that you've learned quickly that you need those skills as well. And being a comedian, you need those skills of, because it's a free show and we're relying on the bucket at the end.
Yeah,
you've worked out very quickly. I need to get in front of them.
Yeah, and actually, the person who taught me most about this was Stuart Goldsmith.
Yes.
We were discussing earlier, because he had a background in being a street performer when he was in his 20s, and so. Just like, it's the applied psychology of it is something that he was always very, very good at. And so the first time that I was doing free stuff, he gave me a lot of pointers.
Yeah, great. He gave me a bucket speech, how to do it. And I was like, oh, yeah, that works really well. It's amazing. Just the language of it. Just, oh, yeah, cool. But now we've got the contactless as well. Now, I know a few people that had the contactless. And when I first started hearing about it, I was like, oh, come on, I don't know about that. Now you're becoming the thing that the free fringe was against.
Mm.
But it makes total sense. People don't really have cash on them.
Other than the fact that, like, when I go to free shows in Edinburgh, I'll make sure that I have cash on me, because I want to, like, someone's time is still worth something.
Yes.
So I make sure that I do. But other than that, like, I feel actively angry if I have any sort of, actual money on me.
It's true. We were just now trying to park my car, and I just went...
Was it like something where you need like a 50p piece? So I haven't had one of these since 2006. What the hell is going on?
I had to get the app while I'm stood there. So it makes total sense. So it makes total sense to have that. And you're in the Monkey Barrel this year.
Yes. So this time it's, I think, a nice sort of best of both worlds scenario. So Monkey Barrel, I think they really do things in a nice, proper way.
Yes.
In that, you can pay a bit in advance to reserve a seat, but it's not like wildly expensive in the same way that you can end up spending 15-20 quid ahead on a ticket in some of the other places. And also they do the really good thing of every day, so the venue is going to be a 150 seater and 140 are available for sale, but they say 10 will just be for people who are queuing on the day.
Okay.
So if you genuinely can't afford it but you still want to go along, then you would be able to.
Oh,
and I think
cool.
That's a really nice way.
That's really cool. Because some people, they've seen the, that's like their fifth show, and I really want to go, but I've done all my cash in the buckets before.
And I always think about years ago, so Kyle Kinane, who I think is an extraordinarily
fantastic
gifted comedian.
Comic, yeah.
And he was doing Edinburgh a few years back. I was very, very excited to see him.
Yeah.
And I took my mother and father, because they were coming up to visit that weekend, bought three tickets, about 50 quid for the three of us to go and again. And I'm like, I didn't really resent it, because I'm like, this guy's spectacular, and I listened to his albums.
Oh, it's absolutely fantastic.
Anyway, went into the underbelly to watch him, and through no fault of his own, there were just like a group of people pissed out of their skulls at the back who were just ruining the gig for everyone. He couldn't really have done a great deal about it.
No.
And just walked back on Cowgate with my mum being like, oh, I didn't really enjoy that. Oh. And you're like, oh, right, okay. Yeah. So I've just spent £50.
That's it, yeah.
It's not his fault. And you're going to go away thinking, oh, that person's not very good at comedy. Yeah. And like, you know, the number of times that will have happened to us as well.
Oh, like, yeah, oh, absolutely.
Oh, this comedian isn't very good. Yeah, it's like, there were a lot of structural forces here that I was fighting very...
Well, complex ideas.
I was fighting very valiantly against segments of the audience, segments of my own psyche.
Yeah, and I'm not very good. How dare you? Yeah. Where do you live? Yeah, it's that's Edinburgh as well, isn't it? It's, you don't know from one show, to, especially on the Free Fringe. Mm. You don't know what to expect from one show to the next when you're every day you're performing. I always find I'm restarting again. I know how the show goes.
Yeah,
but it's all these are new people wafting in. And so, yeah, it could go either way.
But equally, you know? Like, that is also the reason why we do it, right? Like, in the sense that, like, nothing will be identical or nothing should be identical absolutely from beginning to end because there's always going to be that gut. Like,
yes.
Remember, like, my favourite show of Edinburgh, I think, a couple of years ago was where we had the venue had far too many people in it and it was a genuine fire hazard and I was banned from doing things that way in 2018, very justifiably. there was a dude who was like, so, you know the steps that are on the side of the stage in Cabaret Voltaire? So we had people like sitting down the gangways and stuff like
that. Wow.
Not. Just importantly, for legal reasons, these are all lies. I'm lying, and this obviously never happened.
This is just a skit.
This is one of my funny bits. They were very good to make sure that sort of thing stopped happening, and quite rightly. But there was just a guy who, about 40 minutes in, ended up having to clamber over all of these people. I'm like, where the hell are you going? And he's like, oh, I have to go to a wedding now?
What? If we cram in a show before.
Yeah, he was like, oh, I really wanted to see this. It was my only opportunity. And I now have to go to this wedding. And he had, like, a role in the wedding. He wasn't just like...
Oh, really? He was just going. He was flowering his jacket. And I'm really sorry.
It was really lovely because he was just, like, clambering all of these people. And I'd established that his name was Sandy. So I was just singing, you left me, oh, Sandy, as he's, like, trying to get over all of these people. And you're like, that's what made that run for me. Like,
yes.
No matter what, like, the content of the show was what it was, but those little
moments, when you can handle it, that's, I think, when you ride that wave of this has happened suddenly, and then you come out of it, you've still got the laughs, the show just keeps going, and you've had a nice moment that will never be repeated.
Yeah.
You know, I love those bits as well. So, yeah, but it's when it goes against you, when they're just pricked at the back.
Oh,
like
yeah.
You see, and I hope we never see those guys again. Yeah,
I mean, those things happen as well, and they're never like, oh, I mean, I really appreciate this element of the art.
It's really sharpened my skills.
You know, sometimes the form requires this sort of like...
shut up. I don't want pricks in my gigs.
Yeah, go away.
Yeah, but I find with Edinburgh, I found this before, that it is, you're up there with a lot of your friends, and you're doing shows and you're rushing here, rushing there, but I've had a case where I'll be stood in the doorway, and I'll just be going, oh God, I just feel like I'm on my own. It's a bit lonely for a moment. Do you know what I mean? It goes.
Weirdly, for me, Edinburgh always provides almost the opposite of that. Like, I get that way more, like, when I'm on tour, because, like, I don't tour with a support act or anything like that.
Okay.
And so it's just me. And if you're stringing together a sequence of things where, you know, traveling town to town, staying in hotels, nothing's familiar, and I'm in towns where I don't know anyone. And those are the times that I feel properly like, oh, right, my voice is physically unpracticed before I get to the venue because I haven't spoken to another human being all day. That's not normal. And that I find quite challenging. Whereas the thing that I really love about Edinburgh is that it's the one time of the year that... Because obviously we are colleagues, but we're colleagues who are very rarely in the same place.
Yes.
And so it's just really nice to have, like, we're in... It feels like all of my mates are within 15 minutes walk.
Got you.
And it's like, you know, at uni when you could just go and knock for someone and be like, oh, right, cool. Tom's here. Let's hang out. So that's the thing that I really appreciate. And I think weirdly, so Edinburgh becomes almost the tonic to the loneliness that pervades the rest of the year when you're taking that same show all around the place.
Yeah, true. I find that what I have to do now, because I don't do touring shows, but you find yourself out of town a lot doing club gigs and things like that. So you find yourself in strange town, like you just said, on your own. I make a point now of seeing if I can find someone in town that, you know, looking at who's at another club or who's there, and make a point of meeting up with them for coffee.
As in another comic who...
Yeah.
Let's say someone's on at the store in Manchester, someone's on at the Frog, and you're like...
Yeah, right, do you want to meet up? Do you want to have coffee, or do you want to meet up for a beer later on or something? Mm. So I'm not sitting on my own in a hotel room.
Yeah.
Going over, letting the voices go, you're just getting away with this.
Yeah.
Shut up, voices. Do you know what I mean? But yeah, because I...
That's Stanhope liner, because that's when the carnival kicks into high gear.
There must be something that rhymes with orange. Yeah, that shit. Speaking from personal experience, all of a sudden I've wasted a Saturday because I'm lying on my bed. I haven't even put my laptop on. I'm just laying there, just...
Yeah.
Oh, that was a shit thing I did in 1994. Oh, God. Well, I just spent a whole day worrying about that. And those people have moved on. Why am I still worrying about that? You know, they think you're a dick, but they've moved on. Yeah. They've probably met other dicks since then. So, I know what you mean.
That whole, the days in bed when, if you're honest and someone asks you at the end of the day, what did you do today? And you said, I worried about tomorrow.
I mean, I read it in Ruby Wax's book, and she was talking about, she explains why we are predisposed to negativity rather than positivity. It's our alarm system that keeps us alive, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And just knowing that little bit has changed my life. Because you think, I'm the only one that's negative. I'm the only one that thinks this way. Like, no, we all do.
Mm.
Everybody does. Everyone leans towards that. It's how you deal with it. It's not letting it dominate you.
Yeah.
You know?
I think I was talking to someone on a rival podcast about this yesterday. So
stop this.
We shall not mention any names. This is the only podcast that exists. It was a very nice one. Has by Lauren Patterson and Aaron Giles. Conversations Against Living Miserably. And we were talking about a similar thing.
Yeah.
And it's like, there is kind of a weird one where, obviously, you are like, oh, right, everyone does feel certain kinds of negativity and what have you. But it's also very, because it's such an internal experience, it's very odd coming to terms with the fact that not everyone feels it to the same extent.
Yes.
That's kind of like... So, I was talking about just retrospectively thinking about times in my life where I was like, now I'm like, oh, that wasn't normal. That wasn't that wasn't normal at all. But at the time, I was just like, oh, just a bit sad at the moment. It's like, that's why I can't move or eat. Most people can move or eat even when they're a bit sad. So
this is extra. I know what you mean. But I was listening to you again on Stuart's thing, and you were mentioning antidepressants.
Mm-hmm.
I've been on antidepressants once, and they probably weren't the right ones. I just kind of, I didn't feel anything. It sort of numbed me to everything.
Really?
And it didn't work for me. So I'm like, so now I've been off of them since, and I'm like, now I'm good. I'd rather just feel it rather than, just I try and be more active, do things more physical things rather than rely on medication. But you were talking.
Well, so I've sort of done both, right?
Yeah.
So I was on for several years, and then for about a year went off, and then eventually I was just like, okay, that was a worthwhile experiment in seeing what it's like, but turns out what it's like is not great. So let's get back on this.
Let's get back on the nice times.
It's always going to be, it's. The responses as individual to everyone as the feeling is or whatever, however you want to conceive of it. It works for me. And my whole thing, when I went off and I was talking about going off it in stand-up, I was just like, look, I'm only talking about my own experience. It's the only one I can comment on. Stuff works for you. Great. If you're interested in trying it, maybe you should. More power to your elbow. I can only talk about my own experience.
Of course, yeah.
It's a thing that relatively works for me.
Yeah, that's it. If you found a way, then that's excellent. You know, but does it numb you to stuff? Do you feel It just levels you out. Stops the negativity and.
But doesn't stop, but certainly like, it sort of, you know, it stops everything being dialed up to 11.
Right. Yeah.
And everything
just like a whisper.
Yeah, like I've got the EQ knob or whatever it would be. Like everything's constantly going to red, and you're just like, let's just dial down the gain there a little bit. And everything's just like, all right, we're in the green. We're occasionally straying into the orange, but that's okay.
That can happen
sometimes. Like life still needs dynamics, but it doesn't need
extremes.
Yeah, exactly.
I know what you mean. You are a very intelligent man, and do you find that sometimes that because you're so aware, especially politically as well, do you not find that that could play a part? That kind of gets to you. Sometimes you wish you didn't know as much. Do you know what I mean?
Well, to a certain extent, like I have done, of just like I used to be massive news junkie and used to like for a period of time, I had fucking live alerts whenever Donald Trump tweeted anything, and I was like, oh, what's this prick saying now? And they're like, in what universe is this beneficial to me?
Exactly.
Like,
I
cannot do a single thing about this.
So you know about it.
Exactly. Yeah. And this is like just a horrible condition that we live in now, where it's like I'm just as capable as human beings have ever been, more or less, but I now have a magic thing in my pocket that buzzes every time there's a catastrophe I can do nothing to prevent. And you're like, oh, God.
That must be draining.
Yeah. And but then, like, I guess, I don't, in the answer to the first part of your question, like, I wouldn't really know because I don't know.
No.
I don't know how anyone else works.
No. I mean, I suppose I'm coming from my point of view. But again, that's only one I know. I was never very academic, and I've said this on many podcasts before. At school I'm not stupid, but just books and things like that. I wasn't interested. They weren't speaking to me.
Yeah.
You know, but music and art and things like that I was really into. But they were like, that was sort of, in the school I went to, they kind of like pushed to the side. I know that you do those in your spare time. But now we want you to learn.
I mean, this makes sense considering that this current get up makes it look as though you've definitely won the Turner Prize at some stage.
Like, I won in the end.
You're looking swish today, Rich.
Thanks, man. Yeah. I appreciate that. Yeah, but you're wearing proper vintage. I mean, that's your grandfather.
Yeah, got my granddaddy's jabon.
Yeah, man. That's going way back.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's like a hipster's dream.
Yeah.
But it's that, you know, to be that intellectual, because I would never class myself as intellectual, but you are an intellectual man, very switched on, very in tune with everything, you know, academically, and you can work things out, and almost like a scientist, almost like you can see the puzzles in the universe and the way the universe gets put together and things like that. And that must, you know, sometimes you want to be unplugged from the matrix, you know.
Does that I don't think like the capacity to overthink things is limited with particular like academic backgrounds or stuff like that. Like, but it's one of these things that, you know, becomes in many ways, as you'll note, like it's professionally handy as well.
Yes.
Because like if you are trying to see things from a slightly different angle or construct thoughts or deconstruct perhaps experiences that you think are relatively universal, but that people may not have considered in that particular way before, then you do need to be a bit of an overthinker, and that can be like quite a boon in a lot of
ways,
but can also be terrible. And I'm in no way saying, because like I've got negative quantities of time for the sort of fetishization of like, oh, this is so like crucial to the creative process
and stuff like that.
Like, you'd much rather just a bit like been happy. So yeah, I'm not trying to come at it from that angle, but definitely sort of.
Yeah, it's just this sounds snobby and things like that, but you see people on Instagram and things like that, and they're sharing makeup tips, and makeup is the top of everything, and then they're bought into the whatever's happening on the high street, like they're into sort of mid level fashion and things like that, and I'm like, and that, but they're like, oh, this is amazing. I'm like, oh, sometimes I wish I was a bit more like that and not kind of, it sounds shit, I can't really
but you'll definitely have like, I mean, you'll have your own obsessions and peccadilloes and all of that
sort of
thing.
Of course,
I fucking like, Yeah, I'm not.
Yeah,
I'm not doing makeup tips on Instagram, but I'm reading the Wikipedia pages about obsolete models of train at like 2 a.m. I mean, like, it's really important that I know about this.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think sometimes
I just pick my own weird niche.
Yeah, yeah. I think what I mean is, it's just that sometimes I just like to just not be aware of what's going on around me. It would just be nice to just, I suppose, with what we do, we have to be, don't we?
Yeah, but also, like, you can, I think that's why, like, being a bit more in control of one's use of social media, for example, becomes quite an important thing.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like, on any platform, when you've got the endless scroll and you've got, like, I keep my phone on black and white now and turn it on to colour if someone sends me a photo or something like that.
Right.
But, you know, like, the whole thing's designed for gamification, and the same way that casinos get you hooked on things. Yes. Like, there's a red dot, this must be the most urgent thing possible to think about, and it's definitely helped me be less of a phone addict.
That's amazing.
To have changed that. So there are all of those ways. It's just that, now live in a world, like, you know, we're running the same hardware in there that has been run the entire time, and now live in a world of absolutely constant stimuli.
Absolutely.
Like, I think about, so for example, when my parents met, my mother went on holiday to India, met my dad when he was there, and then she came back to the UK. And she, at the time, was at university, was North London Polytechnic, now Middlesex University. So that's like Oakwood, Cockfosters, one end of the Piccadilly line.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And she grew up in Alperton, absolutely other end of the Piccadilly line. Right, and Dad couldn't, obviously, no email, no FaceTime, no text, nothing like that. So only thing to do was letters, even international calling was too expensive at that time.
Of course, yeah.
Her parents didn't like him or the idea of him, because he was never going to have a lot of money or that sort of thing. Right, and they wanted her to marry someone with a better profession.
Is that
like
a cultural thing? Is that more of a, or is it just...
Yeah, but it's also like with anyone, just like
anyone,
wanting,
yeah,
the best for, wanting the best for their kid, of being like, yeah, you could marry this weird artist who lives in a different continent to you. Or
this guy's got his own
lovely doctor, like, two doors away, come on.
So he
could only write to the Pigeonhole when she was at uni, right? And so she, every day, regardless of whether she needed to go in for a particular lecture or anything like that, would get the Piccadilly line all the way to the other end of the thing and check her Pigeonhole. And if there was a letter from him, great. If there wasn't a letter from him, Piccadilly line all the way back home.
Amazing.
Everything like that. And I realised when I first heard this story, I was like, well, I mean, yeah, I mean, that's very romantic. But, like, obviously, you know, you can listen to a few podcasts when you're on the tube, but, you've got your, you're playing Candy Crush or what have you. And like, no headphones, no phones to distract. Like, you might have, you'd have a book or the paper or something like that. But it wasn't, like, for that hour. You're like, oh, right, I can just experience absolutely any stimuli I desire on the face of the earth, and everything will be absolutely fine.
Yeah, and it took longer as well. Trains were slower.
Yeah.
So that was a day out of your life. Just go and check your letterbox.
Yeah, exactly.
That is commitment and love. That is...
You're listening to Insane in the Membrane's Edinburgh season. Scroll back through our past episodes from season one to hear from other comedians playing this year's Edinburgh Festival, including Phil Ellis, Simon Evans, Nick Revel, George Rigdon, Jen Brister and Ishan Akbar. All those podcasts and this episode have Edinburgh show details within the podcast description. Expand the details section on your app and come and see us.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
This show is made by Dark Horse Digital. Shooting, live streaming, and podcast production.
There's definitely some sort of, you know, like when we see large-scale resurgences in sort of ideas of wellness and meditation and all of this sort of thing, a lot of which is devised to get money from people, which is quite frustrating. There aren't, like, just seems like it's everyone just being like, collectively, we've sped up a lot recently, and maybe
bring it back a bit.
Tiny bit slower.
Yeah.
Might not be fine.
Yeah.
And not like, if it's like, damn, responded to the email within 3 minutes. What the hell is going on? Are they dead? What's going on?
Well, it's like with this yesterday, because I was really busy yesterday, and then I was like, oh shit, I haven't done my emails. And I was panicking. I hadn't replied to you guys. I'm like, oh my God, I've not done it. It's going to be cancelled. Oh God. And it's like, it never used to be like that. You get a letter in the post. Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I will write a letter back, and then it's just a week.
When did you start doing comedy?
I started in 2004.
Right, okay.
So I started late, I was 32.
Yeah.
Whereas you started when you were 20? Before that?
I did first gig when I was 15, so 2006. Holy shit. We didn't start that far away from one another.
But I
just did it like as a weird hobby occasionally, and then it was after I went to uni and came back down to London that I started trying to make a proper fist of it.
Wow, man. It never even occurred to me when I was a kid that I could be a comic. I loved comedy, but it was never in my head to go, you could do that.
Because I'm thinking like, it's about like right around the turn of millennium was mobile phones first becoming like a real thing, right? So I was thinking, by the time that you'd started, you could be driving to a place and give the promoter a ring and say whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But like, I just think like, if you'd started like 5 years previously and you'd been in a traffic jam.
I've heard the stories.
On the way to, and then it's just like, and then they just didn't turn up.
We don't know what happened to them. Never saw them again. the amount of stories I've heard where they've had to come off and find a phone box and then ring up and go, look, you've got the whole gig in the car. We'll get there probably, I don't know. It's amazing, isn't it? And now we're all so well connected, which is a good thing. Which is a good thing. But but sometimes I wish we weren't. Like Jade and I, we do try and say, right, no phones in the bedroom.
Mm.
Like when we go to bed, let's just not. But it ends up creeping back in. You know, she'll be in bed when I get in or whatever, and she'll just be watching whatever on her phone. And then I'll get into bed and it's in my pocket. I've been in the car, so I might as well check. And then you're back to square one again, it's in the bed. But there is something, I do sleep better when the phone's away.
I find it very interesting how you listen to interviews with sort of Silicon Valley tech executives, who actually know the ins and outs of this shit, all have extraordinarily strict rules about these devices in their, like Zuckerberg's got his camera taped up, none of the Silicon Valley guys will have phones in their bedrooms, none of the kids are allowed iPads or anything like that. I have spent my entire working life making sure that this is as ruinous to individuals' health as possible. There's no way that I'm going to inflict that on my family.
Are you mad?
It's like, God, I'm a tobacco executive. What am I going to do, like, give my 5-year-old a box of snuff for his birthday? That's insane.
Yeah, exactly. You go, you devils. They've all got their electronic stuff in bags, like lead bags when they get indoors. Don't touch that, man. Yeah. it's a weird, like, well, Sean McLaughlin talks about it in his show, you know, like, we've now got things, this, old stuff and new stuff at the same time.
Oh, that was
time.
A fantastic what? Bit.
It's one of the best shows I've ever seen.
Yeah, absolutely. Hell so I ended up yeah. seeing it a couple of times yeah. and it was just, yeah, spectacular.
Phenomenally.
But that, yeah, yeah the two most popular kinds of music, MP3 and vinyl.
That
beautiful line that he says of, I don't know when I am, wasn't it?
Like, wonderful. And it's so true.
Yeah, I love that when someone can say, like, it's like yeah. he said that line and I'm like, I'm in.
I know.
Yes.
And it was true because I'm like, I love vinyl. I collect records, but sometimes it's just a pain in the ass to put it on, and then you go, oh, that side's finished. You got to go back across. So I've got to make sure if I'm on my laptop, I've got the record player behind me. So it's fine. It's like, I'm so cool. No, this is shit. MP3s are right there. It's ridiculous. You got into comedy very young, and from listening to you on Stuart's podcast. You're very open about things, about your life and what's gone on, which I found really refreshing. But not and talking about it in your shows, but you're not doing it in a way to sort of, because I feel sometimes when people do shows, if they're talking about a relative that's passed on or something traumatic that's happened to them, sometimes I feel they're like they're crowbarring it into a show. Edinburgh seems to become a bit like that.
Yeah, whereas absolutely.
You're doing it because you actually that's where you're at and that's what you feel.
Yeah,
you
and it's like,
about.
Well, if this is what, if most of your waking experience is thinking about this thing, then what else are you going to end up doing stuff about?
Yeah,
and
also,
this isn't like, it's not to say that one is ever entirely open. Like, there are still definitely things where I'm like, there's you got to draw a line somewhere internally. Of like, otherwise, you're just like. You know, you don't want to effectively perform a vivisection of yourself on stage and be like, check out the inside of this rib cage here.
It's
like,
tuck in.
Yeah, it's like, that's what comedy is, baby. I'm cutting myself and you're watching me heal.
Help yourself. Tell you what you want.
So there's got to be some sort of thing. And like, definitely, so I was thinking about this relatively recently where in the last show, as you remembered, as you said, ended up being largely about a few deaths in the family and some other things around that. And it was, you know, it was based on a trip that I took to India towards the end of 2017. By the time it finished touring was towards the end of April 2019, not even 2 months ago. Everything, and you're like, that's a long time to keep going on about, to keep sort of bringing this up for oneself as much as anything. Sort of like, I feel as though there's things in there that I would have moved on from earlier had I not been talking about it all the time. But because it was a story about my family and about the people who I really, really love, it was an important enough one that I'm like, no, I wanna tell this thing. Out there. Whereas with the new one, there are like certain things that I'm like, ideally speaking, I'm not going to be thinking about X or Y in April 2020 when this stops touring. So let's not put it in to this now, because while it may have some sort of relevant catharsis for you in the present, think about you a year from now.
Yeah, when you've
that guy is not going to enjoy the fact that he's talking about this shit for money.
You're right, man. But I think what you were talking about in Duffer, in your past show, was that you'd had that with you, up until the show. So, I suppose did the show help you deal with it and kind of put it away or put it to one side? I've talked about this before when people die. I don't think you ever get over it. I think you just find a way of carrying it around.
Yeah,
you know, I think it did the show help you with that?
Well, it felt quite like, in some ways, almost felt like, certainly like the towards the end of it, felt like the eulogy, right? And that got to like, and about this person who I had loved so dearly, who kind of was like a second mother to me when I was a child, my grandmother. So, long story short, lived with us till I was 5, got deported, really see her for subsequent 22 years, and then did when she was on her deathbed towards the end of her life.
Wow.
That way that, like, particularly, like, people who were that influential as a kid, and, like, with her, I always felt like a 5-year-old boy, because that was, like, the last time that I was. And so, like, the fact that I got to go out and end up telling thousands of people, this person was fucking excellent. You know, like, none of you have met her, none of you know, but like, I think that I didn't mention
in the show.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, I think that I didn't say in the show, but I remember on the day that she did pass away, and I was in London because I just got back from Edinburgh, and my dad had gone over. And I was talking, like, spoke to family in India that day, spoke to family in the United States that day. And we realized that I was with my mum and my sister. And I was like, oh, right. What's just happened is we've spent an afternoon where people on three continents are just effectively agreeing that they love this person and they were great and led a good life. And like, that is the single best thing that any human being can hope
that
for.
That is incredible.
Right?
Yeah.
Unless, like, maybe some of you are very fortunate and you also have family in South America who can get on board with that. Like, we only have the North American one, so if you can beat me with four continents, mate, then fair enough. Yeah. You get, like, get some Antarctic love.
Man, that what a way, what a legacy.
Yeah,
you know,
and so that was a nice thing to be able to talk about in comedy.
That's amazing. Yeah, because a friend of mine passed away a couple of years ago, and he was massive on comedy, and I just didn't because he was away with work, and he's always had respiratory problems and spinal problems, and he was in his hotel room, and he just went to sleep. He didn't have his inhaler or something like that, and he just went. And then someone rang me up, and our Paul's passed, and you're going, Paul who? Because he just didn't expect it, you know?
Yeah.
And then I was like, well, Paul, I'm like, oh wow. And it took me ages to get my head around it, because I didn't see him very often.
Yeah.
I sort of saw him now and again. Like, last time I saw him was in Edinburgh 2 years ago. And so, but when I saw him, we had the best time.
Yeah.
And then I'd see him like 3 months later. So when he'd gone, it took me ages to go, oh yeah, I'm not going to see him. It was weird. And so, like, the same with your grandmother.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, like, I think that's obviously, like, even stranger because, like, I mean, she was 87 when she passed away. Like, it's not odd. That is so weird. It's like when she was born, she had a life expectancy of 27, for God's sake. Like, she put a hell of a shift in beating that.
Not too soon.
But yeah, when it's a young friend, just be like, Paul, and you're like, no, that doesn't, that doesn't work.
Yeah, odd. Even now, I talk about him and I'm like, I think he's still at work.
It's like, oh, I'm going to text that guy and have a pint.
Yeah. It's odd. You know, and it's my first experience of really dealing with death. I've talked about it on other episodes, and I've even said, I've not really experienced it. And I was thinking about it the other day, I have. But I don't know, it's odd. I still feel he's here, and it's odd. Weird. I suppose different people's experiences with death are different, and you know, it's just odd, you know. So yeah. So, but you seem to have, by doing the show and talking about it, and you know, you've got it in a good place. You know, like Jade talking about her sister passing.
Yeah.
She's worked out a way of carrying it around, like it's in a backpack, and she just gets used to carrying that backpack around. You know. Which is
And there's oh gosh, I can't remember who wrote it now. A book a friend lent me at university, called something. The subheading was something like 50 Tales of the Afterlife. And if you look this up, just Bing it, you know, get right on Bing, guys. Bing.
Bing.
Yeah. I'm going to insist on all podcasts that I'm sponsored by Bing. It's like, look.
It's niche.
Duck, duck, go this shit, all right? Like, yeah, if Alphabet want my reference, they've got a lot of money. And it was this book where this author had, and basically every chapter opens with "when you die," comma,
right,
da da da, and it's 50 potential things that could happen, just like scenarios,
yeah, right,
for what could happen. And the one that really stuck with me is this idea that when you die, you end up in this room, right? And there's an exit to the, you walk through the entrance door, and there's a different exit to the room, and no one in the room knows what's on the other side of the exit,
okay,
right? Because the you only go through the exit when the last remaining person on Earth to know your name has spoken your name for the last time.
Oh, wow.
Right? And then you finally go through it and no one ever knows.
Yeah.
Right? So generally speaking, people are in the waiting room till a couple of generations of their family have gone. But then also you've got, you know, like Abraham Lincoln's in the waiting room and Gandhiji's in the waiting room because people everywhere. And he's like, and for those people, it's very exciting because everyone, well, everyone wants to talk to Abraham Lincoln. So yeah. It's very exciting for him to still be in the room and he's still having a nice enough time. But then you've also got like, there's a middle school in rural Ohio that's named after some local farmer from the 1800s. And he's just like, oh, I want to get out of this room. But every day, a bunch of kids are saying, no one wants to chat to me. I've not really achieved anything much. I just want to know what's on the other side. And just seemed like this really lovely extrapolation of this idea that I think we all carry with us of you're not gone till you're forgotten, right?
Yes.
As long as these people are kept alive in our head, then, so somewhere, Jovi the Asha is still in the waiting room, hanging around.
Just waiting around.
Chatting to Gandhi.
They got to update these magazines. Yeah. My show this year is called Death Becomes Him, and it's about me. I'm dead, but where do I go? Where would I go, you know, based on the life that I've led?
Ooh.
And I've got I'm in a waiting room and there's a door there that's all heavenly and there's a door there that's all scorched. Which one would I go to based on what I've done? So there is that thing about the waiting room.
Hmm.
Seems to be quite popular.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then having
purgatory is such a loaded term. Waiting room seems nice.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, waiting room is great. But purgatory sounds like you actually did something wrong. You don't go straight away. I've been interviewed by the police before and it's like, oh, before you go, one more thing. And you're like, oh, no. What now? I've told you I didn't do it. Yeah, so... Yeah, that sounds really bad as well. It wasn't really bad. It was just a driving thing. We're not going to let you go straight away.
Yeah.
You have to wait for a bit. Yeah.
It would be quite nice if it's like, one more thing. How'd you get your hair like that?
gel. It's weird now. So do your shows, do they just form naturally? You just let it come out of you, or do you just sit down one day and go, right, I'm going to talk about this?
So I think it's just like starts with stuff on the notes section of the phone that I have found this particular thing interesting or this topic worth thinking about. And you sort of, I feel that you often end up writing one joke that's sort of like a keystone or a linchpin or something like that. And then other stuff kind of gets built around that to form a whole routine. But it sort of it varies drastically depending on the show. So for example, with the 2018 one, I knew that I wanted to tell this story.
Yes.
And so everything else came after the fact that I'm going to put it all within the framework of I want to talk about this, which is why hopefully it didn't feel like that thing that you were talking crowbar it. Material was crowbarred into the harrowing tale. Whereas the year before, I was like, right, okay, I've got routines about all of this stuff, and let's link it together with a bunch of callbacks about milk. that'll make sense.
I don't think you
make a holistic thing that way.
Yeah. And do you find it, because you've been nominated twice and you're getting further and further up the ladder in the industry, do you find coping with the industry? Because it's quite a high-pressure industry that we're in.
Mm.
Do you find that difficult, or do you have coping mechanisms in place you can kind of take yourself out for a minute? And
I think the useful... You know. I've never lived with comedians, which I think is really useful.
Very useful.
I've just lived, consistently just with old uni pals who have 9-to-5s and everything. And that means that, on the day-to-day, you're not thinking about... You know, like, I can't imagine, like, if my two flatmates, like... Well, one's a surgeon and one's a civil servant who works on Brexit. Both of them are under more pressure than I am.
I can't make this story work.
Sometimes being a clown is hard. it can feel a bit like there's a beautiful Mitchell and Webb sketch, which I don't know if you've seen, where they're talking about their days at work. And Robert Webb is a pediatric surgeon or something like that. He's like, sometimes it can just be so difficult because you'll be, you know, you're looking at a parent and you're talking to them and you know that child's not going to make it. How was your day at work? And it was like, oh, it was fine. It was like, no, you're allowed to have had a, you're allowed to have had a difficult day at the ice cream factory.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, Jeff was a bit, oh, Jeff, tell me.
It's true, though, isn't it? It's true, but I find...
Undoubtedly, like, this isn't to denigrate the profession. I think that a lot of us actually work considerably harder than a lot of people who will spend half of their working day on Facebook. Just because you're actually in an office from certain time to certain time is no guarantee that you've done anything.
No, I know.
It's proof that you've sat in a place.
You went there, they saw you, and then you left.
So while we did, like... We do get the work done and do what we need to do, but also I think it's just a case of keeping in mind that it is such like an outlandish privilege to be a clown.
Look what we're doing this today. Is I know I'm driving here today. I'm like, oh, it's rain. That's all you've got to worry about today. You know, that's it. And I've got a gig later. Oh, poor you. You know, it's very privileged to do what we do. But I just know that as you get further into the industry, more people expect more from you. You've got to do more things, but as you say, it's a privilege. So you sound like you've got your head.
Yeah. Well, and just like have a realistic assessment of a realistic assessment of what you're actually capable of doing. Don't take too much on, and you'll be all right. Take your tablets. It's all going to be all right.
Yeah, they take your tablets. Have you taken different kinds of tablets to get to the ones you agree with?
No. It's just the one. I think that I might end up having a conversation with my GP next time I go in. Yeah. I don't know whether I need more. It's the same one that I've always done. And then... combination of vitamin B and vitamin D because I don't eat meat and I have dark skin in a dark country.
It's like, you're going to be lacking
these
something.
Weird, I hate that I'm that easy to figure out. Do you know? It's just like, oh yeah, immediately quite a bit better.
It's funny, every time
the whole exercise and diet thing and you're like, oh, please be lying.
You missed it on Stu. Yeah. And I really laughed out loud when you were like, oh, I don't want it to be just that. And it's true. Like someone said, you know, have a banana. And I went, what? Yeah, it's really good for your depression. So I have a banana a day. And I'm like, oh yeah. Why don't I have more fruit? Fruit and water. Oh yeah, because I'm mostly water. What am I doing? It's so simple. But it's sometimes, you know, I want someone to go, no, actually, this is actually what it is. And you go, oh, excellent. That's something I can do nothing about. Excellent.
Yeah. Could you just write in your official medical notes, tortured artist, please? That would be really useful. And
yeah, I will do. Can you put your shoes back on?
It's like, for my diagnosis, you seem to have written that Irish eyes are basic bitch who needs a jog. Like, what? That seems inconsiderate, sir. I don't know that I agree with that one.
Yeah. Why are you following my prescription to a plane? Don't throw it at me. Yeah, I know. We have to fucking get ourselves, check ourselves, don't we, sometimes? I think we're very lucky to do what we do.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. And when are you on a monkey barrel?
I am on at 2:15 in the afternoon at one of the new Monkey Barrel. If you know anything about the Monkey Barrel, it's not the Monkey Barrel.
Oh,
it's
okay.
Going to be, they're opening some... Are we allowed to say this? Yeah, I don't know if they were doing we're going to announce everything. But they've got some new rooms opening, like basically opposite the current ones.
Where the Tron is, or...?
No, not that far, on Blair Street.
Yeah, right, okay.
I think in the place that used to do, like, tour groups that I never saw anyone go into or out of.
No.
I think that they're just making that into some new spaces for the Fringe.
Oh, okay, well, that'd be cool. And you've sorted out your accommodation?
Oh, boy.
We've just sorted ours out.
Oh, God, it's next level.
Well, yeah. It's been mad this year.
Awful.
Yeah.
Absolutely awful. And I mean, the reasons for it being, like, the fact that there's been a legislative change to assure minimum protection for tenants, like from our perspective. But I liked, I can't remember who it was who said to me, but some stand-up is just like, talking about the ways that, like, because effectively we're just like small business people and like get frustrated by things like this. And he just said to me, the thing is that almost every stand-up comedian is a Thatcherite who refuses to admit it. I can kind of see where you're coming from on that one, really.
That's on the nose, actually.
Why can't you turf these goddamn students out?
Don't they know who we are? Every year they... We're actually, one of the university lecturers is, we're having her flat.
Ah, nice.
But it's on the proviso, we have to look after her cats.
Right.
And I've got to stay in Edinburgh until the very end of August to look after, because I think the festival's only up to like the 26th or something.
Yeah.
And I'm up there until the end, so just so we got.
So
I watch everyone leave.
5 days.
I've done that before, though. I've stayed up to do the stand. Yeah. And you can... I was sitting in my flat. You can't see. You can't see anything. You can physically feel Edinburgh draining out.
Yeah.
You can feel, and you walk out and then all the posters suddenly have faded. And it's... Yeah, it's like...
You're not doing a show on the last Monday, are you?
No, thank God. We've made that mistake.
It's very odd. You watch... There are some people still valiantly doing shows and you're watching an entire festival just be deconstructed around them. Someone on stage in a pub doing that, and like the entire room is just being dismantled. Someone nicks the mic. That's about 30 minutes.
It's not quite full, so the chairs at the back are being put away as you're on. No, we've done that. We've learnt the hard way. We're out. I'll be there. I'll be there to look after the cats, but I should make the most of it to regroup and get my head together.
Yeah, actually enjoy the city.
Yeah. I do love it up there. It's a great place.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that'd be nice. Yeah, are you living far away from where you're playing?
About a 20-minute walk.
Yeah, oh, nice. So you get your exercise, which will be all right.
Yeah, so we're out in Newtown.
Yeah, lovely.
This time.
That's nice. I was out there a couple of weeks ago. I was in Edinburgh. And I stayed out at a place called the Murray Lens or something like that. It was an Airbnb, and it was half an hour on a bus. It was an hour and a half walk. And I was...
Is it near the stadium? Is Murrayfield's the stadium?
No, Murrayfield's out towards the airport. But right. This was out the other way, out past Arthur's Seat, way out. And I was like, I did the Gilded Balloon gigs, and I walked home an hour and a half later. And I only did it once because I got accosted by so many people. Yeah, you're an hour in and this girl just pops out of a bush. Hey, can I use your phone? No. No, it's fine.
You're running weird gauntlet.
Then some other guy, do you want some coke? Mate, no. What is this mad shit?
The Leith Walk obstacle course.
He's walking up the white lines in the middle of the road going, this is the only place I want to be. This has been great out here. Thanks, man. Really appreciate it.
Thank you
very much, man.
Insane in the membrane.
Thanks very much to Ahir Shah. What a man. Great chat. Really interesting to talk to him. Absolute dude. You'll find ticket details for Ahir's Edinburgh show in the podcast description on your app, along with tickets to my own show, Rich Wilson, Death Becomes Him, and the Insane in the Membrane live shows. The Edinburgh season continues next time with Rob Alton. Lastly, but by no means leastly, big shout out to a few people. Chloe Day, who listens in every week. Big shout out to you, Chloe. Thank you. Anthony CB on iTunes there, giving us a wonderful review. 5 stars. Thank you, Anthony CB. Sarah C, 692. Thank you as well for a wonderful review. Lovely 5 stars there. So thank you guys for the support. Really do appreciate it. A big thank you to everybody that listens in every week. Take care of yourselves. Look after each other, and we'll see you again. Ta-da.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Made by darkhorsedigital.co.uk. Shooting, live streaming, and podcast production.